Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, one night in Sacramento, Williams.
Only once.
Not like I lived here for decades.
That sounds like a triple X movie, by the way.
That's great.
That's awesome. We are excited to
talk. I know listen to this podcast.
don't look up Spencer Williams online. Just all I'm saying. We are excited to talk about tonight's movie as we are getting into one of the more recent films that dropped on Amazon for the year 2021, and that is One Night in Miami. So stick around as we dive into that. We're excited to talk about it. So before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. Check us out. We got over 200 episodes on our website. Actually, I think we're pushing almost to the 250 mark.
This is 250.
This is 250?
Yes.
Oh, well. Happy New Year. We are at 250 episodes on our website. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. We're excited to have you come over, listen to us, and drop us a line on our social pages. So, but like I said, we are excited about today's film. This has been one that's been talked about in a lot of the press circles and has been mentioned. And to be quite honest, I'm actually anxious to get into this conversation because we actually haven't had much of an opportunity to discuss it ourselves, other than the comment here or there. I am excited as we dive into our review of One Night in Miami. So this movie has a lot of unique aspects of it, and there's going to be a lot of different things that we're going to be talking about, but nevertheless... This is a very unique film, and I don't know if I've seen a film kind of like it. I don't know. What about you, Spence? Had you...
Not really anything I can think of off the top of my head that's quite like this.
So, before we do, Spencer, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
One Night in Miami is a fictional account of one incredible night where icons Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown gather discussing their roles in the civil rights movement and cultural upheaval of the 60s.
Directed by the one and only Regina King, and based on the stage play of the same name by Kemp Powers, the film stars Kingsley Ben-Adir, Ellie Goree, Aldis Hodge, and Leslie Odom Jr. This actually is the first film by a black female director to be selected by the Venice Film Festival, so that's actually pretty cool, seeing as it is a film that is directed by Regina King, who, if you've been living under a rock, did... incredible work in the Watchmen series that was on HBO.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, it's so... Have you had a chance to see it?
I've not. I've heard lots of people go on and on about it.
It's incredible. Like, you think it's going to be about one thing, and it kind of switches gears, and it's a very telling and very unique story. Side note: the screenwriter or the creator, I guess, the showrunner for Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Went out on to one of the outlets and said that he doesn't plan on doing another season because he doesn't know where to go from there in terms of topping that story. And to be quite honest,
that's cool.
To be honestly perfectly frank, I agree with him. Like,
but more people should take that direction. Just gonna throw that out there.
I mean, if something happens where there's another way to build on that story, then yeah. But just for the sake of money, just for the sake of like continuing something for the, you know, for the means of views or whatever.
We have to stop talking about this because this could be an episode on.
I'm just saying that series is really great. And you see the way it ends and you're like, no and yes. Like, it's great. But back to what we were talking about. Directed by Regina King. The fact that this film has gone all the way to the Venice Film Festival and has been selected is a huge honor. And I'm not too sure how vast Regina King's filmography is, but I do know that this is going to begin making, you know, recognition of her name in circles, similar to like with Jordan Peele, where everybody just kind of thought he was just an actor, a comedian. I don't know if he does comedy on the stage, but a comedic actor who turned director. If this is going to do the same thing for Regina King, I'm all for it. Regina King has done some incredible stuff already. I believe she did When Bale Street Could Talk, which was, I believe, the one presented by Barry Jenkins, director Barry Jenkins.
I pull up her list. I don't see that one on here for director, at least.
Oh, she was just an actress in it then.
Yeah. I didn't realize she was also an actress. She's very talented.
Oh, yeah. She's been an actress in it for a long time now. I don't know if you know this, but she's both of the boys in the Boondocks.
I don't know.
Yeah, she's both of them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's really cool. This film also was released on Amazon Prime Video this past week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the 15th of January, which actually marks the director Regina King's 50th birthday. So I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
Diving into this movie, this is a very interesting movie because it is a fictitious take on a true event incident. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that sounds right. that's right.
Because I think when we were watching it, I was like, wait, how does this work again? So not everything that happened in the film happened for real, but the events surrounding the event in terms of it happening and so forth happened. I'm trying not to lose people. I swear. So it's very interesting. I was telling Spencer, I didn't even know that Sam Cooke, Muhammad Ali, and Jim Brown knew Malcolm X. Like, I didn't even know they were like cool like that.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they were thick as thieves. You know, they all knew each other. They were friends. I don't know the accuracy of the implication that Malcolm X had gone to at least five of Sam Cooke's shows, mm-hmm. but the fact that they actually knew each other well enough to kind of come together one evening in Miami kind of speaks volumes on its own. The idea that these four powerhouses in their own right came together as like a meeting of the minds. I'm going to be really honest. When we were talking about what to watch for this week, we were kind of going in a different direction.
Yeah.
We really weren't sure. We almost went with we were talking about a couple other films, and then it just dawned on me that this movie had dropped, and I'm like, well, let's watch this one. You know, it just dropped. I'm up for giving it an opportunity. And we kind of watched it last minute. So let me just preface this by saying, we're not usually like this. We're pretty good planners for the most part.
Yeah.
We try. We do put a lot of effort into each episode. So nobody take this to heart and be like, oh, they don't do nothing for their...
They just watch the movies and then immediately talk about
it. And they just poop on all of my favorite DC movies. I wasn't too sure as to what this movie was going to entail. And I'll be brutally honest, from what I had seen thus far, I didn't know if it was going to be a musical-based film or if it was going to be a movie that kind of delved into almost like a, I don't know, like some type of journey tale, you know, whatever, during the course of the film for these four people. Little did I know that it was completely not any of those things. When I had mentioned the movie to you, what were you aware of, Spence, of the film by at that point?
It's really basically what I said in the synopsis is that, like, someone had put out a film and it had Muhammad Ali and all these other guys in it, and they were doing things. And I was like, do these people even know each other?
Yeah.
Was like the most surprising thing. I was like, one, I don't even know who some of these people are. Two, like, I didn't realize that they were all connected, and then I was like, how much fact is in this alleged tale?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my major questions.
It's true. And I'm not, I don't laugh about it to kind of make it comical. I laugh because it's funny. I typically do a lot of homework when I come into a film. And the last, there have been a couple occasions in the last month that we've kind of just thrust ourselves into a film that seemed like a good idea at the time. And it's interesting that this is one of those movies where I hadn't seen a trailer. I knew of it. I knew it was making waves. I knew that it was getting people's attention. And I kind of wanted to see what all the hype was about. This movie I knew had four very influential people in the civil rights movement back in the 60s. I knew that much. To not sound kind of like I'm dishonoring the film or disrespecting it, but from the way it looked and portrayed, because I hadn't seen a trailer on it, it looked like a black version of The Hangover, earnestly. and I wasn't sure how much I was going to get out of it. So my expectations, honestly, was I was really, really hoping that this movie had substance. Like, I didn't want to see a movie just for the sake of crazy and zany things happening. If this movie was going to be including four very influential people, I did not want it to just be like, and by the way, Muhammad Ali gets into a fight with a clown. Check it out in Amazon Prime. No, I didn't know if that was going to be the case. And I wasn't going to enjoy a movie that was going to, in all honesty, bastardize African-American icons in history. Because I didn't know this was even a thing. Like, who would have known? Well, okay, let me take this back. How would I have known, me as a, you know, a Latino in Sacramento, whose history books go back to, like, in Texas, Battle of the Alamo and stuff like that. Like, that's what we talked about. I don't recall ever the incident of these four powerful leaders coming together in a hotel room after one of Muhammad Ali's more famous bouts. Like, were you aware that that happened?
Well, first off, California schools don't talk about any of these people. So, no.
So if you're on the school board for the California Board of Education, notate.
We only talk about Martin Luther King Jr. and that's it.
And Cesar Chavez. Don't get it wrong. Cesar Chavez.
Nah, he wasn't on my curriculum.
Spencer, we have a park with his name on it.
I have to look that up. We have a problem with education. That's a different podcast also.
We don't talk about him in our schools. We just name parks after him.
hopefully they talk about him now, but when I was a kid, they don't. Which is sad.
It's very sad that the most influential people in history are only in our heads because we saw the movie about them.
Yeah, how sad is that? Unless you, like, look up your own information. Like,
yeah. And
I think, like, part of that's on purpose, but we'll really talk about that some other
Yeah. And it is true, because it's like, you think about it, okay, and I'm not gonna go into detail about this, like, excessively, but I know when myself and my brother were in school in Texas, they made every point every year to recognize and remember the battles that made Texas independent from Mexico. I remember all those because I remember we lived in one of the more prominent cities of San Antonio, and we had the Alamo in downtown.
Right.
And so I was well aware. In fact, I actually wrote a story, a short story for a national competition that won first place on the Battle of the Alamo from the perspective of the Mexican side. That was long ago, though. But so
that's cool.
In Texas, it's very, very important that every child knows all the main battles and who was in it, like Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett and all them, you know, Travis Austin and or Stephen Travis and all these. I know they.
No,
mean,
no. I was thinking about a conversation we had earlier where I learned that Davy Crockett was a real person. I thought he was just a Disney personality for the longest time, because you told me that like a few weeks back.
It was.
Like, wow. California does not care at all.
Davy Crockett. Yes, he is a real person, and he died at the Alamo.
Okay.
So it's back to our main. That just happened.
This just skidded into an education is broken.
We need a talk with the people who who learn it, our kids. But I say all that to say these particular individuals, Muhammad Ali, Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, and Malcolm X, I never knew any of these people knew each other, let alone hung out like that. And so for me, I honestly didn't want something hokey. Like that was the my main expectation. I did not want to come into this movie and see icons of history like ridiculed or comically portrayed, you know? What about you? What were some of your expectations for this movie?
Really did not have any, because like when the description is like, wait, what is happening? Like, I don't fully understand that. Like, these people even knew of each other. Like, it makes sense, like, when you really think about it. Like, you know, civil rights movement was going on there. You're going to probably find, like, the prominent people may have at least talked to each other once or twice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that sounds about right. Like, they had one interaction over the course of their lifetime. Like, oh, yeah, I met Jim Brown and blah, 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 and this and that. And that was that one time. But not to the effect of like, oh, we've been friends for a while, so let's hang out in a hotel room late one evening.
Right. So, yeah, really.
I did just not mean to say it sound like Hank Hill right there, by the way.
I'll tell you what.
Boy, tell you what. Propane and propane accessories. Sorry. Especially for this conversation. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Yeah, I'm always desperate. It's ridiculous. Yeah, so like, really just coming into this movie, I was like, okay, what do we got? Because I'm here for it. I don't even know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, I'm going to ask you an honest question. Don't reach over this table and hit me. Do you feel, before watching this movie, do you feel, as an African-American, living obviously in these United States,
yep,
do you feel like a little bad that you didn't know that this had happened?
No,
it just
like
prior to watching the movie,
going back into an education topic.
Well, because like for me, like, okay, like for me, if I had known that, like, and mind you, this is completely ridiculous and this would have never happened, but if I had known that, like, Richie Valens, Zapata, Cesar Chavez, and Jennifer Lopez, I don't know, met up at a coffee bar, like, and this happened at some point in history, and I finally hear about it in a movie, I personally, but this is just me, I'm not saying this is you, but yeah, I would feel bad, because I'm like, holy crud, that actually happened, and I never got a chance to celebrate that? Like, it just, I ask because I'm earnestly asking, because I haven't come across that yet for myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure, I'm more than 100% sure it's going to happen. I'm pretty sure there's this movie that's going to drop and it's going to have like Selena with Marcos Antonio Solis and Enrique Iglesias. And who's the other guy? The one that used to be married to J-Lo? Mark Anthony. Like, they all came together at the Cheesecake Factory and did something.
Like, why are they going to these?
I don't. Well, it's not a mech. I didn't say like some taqueria.
Well,
or anything.
Yeah, I didn't have to, but I'm like, I feel like they could afford somewhere more upscale than the Cheesecake. That's all I'm trying to say.
Have you paid for their cheesecake? You have to be rich to get one of those.
So true.
I just, so that's why I ask. But if you don't, I mean, if it's no mind to you, then it's
no. So like, the thing is, like, I am very used to just like finding out about people later on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, my entire education of Malcolm X was a person who existed during the 1960s. The end.
Okay.
So, like, I'm kind of, like, used to, like, there's these figures that exist, and I don't really know unless I go and look up stuff, mm-hmm, like myself. That's one of the reasons why I mentioned to Eddie earlier that I was also listening to this audiobook about Malcolm X, so I could finally know something about the man and know, like, what he was even, like, what he stood for, what he was doing, because all I hear is, like, he called everyone white devils, and I'm like, well, What? Like, because that's an opening statement that doesn't seem like it's gonna win you a lot of friends.
It takes a journey for a man to get to that point in life. Let's just say that.
I want to know what is his story because it sounds crazy.
What ladder did this man climb to get this level of this?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, maybe for the fact that, I guess maybe the conversation wasn't really known, or like people didn't really find out about the conversation, or it was never mentioned by any of the parties involved. Like maybe that's the reason why we never heard about it in history, but it just kind of bugs me a bit. And mind you, I'm not going to go back down the rabbit trail of the education system, but I would have loved to have learned this in history, of like, Even a whole chapter in history of like the one night in Miami, 1964. Like,
well, I think it's probably because like when you're just learning in general, like unless someone tells you, you probably think about these people in a silo. Like, true. You know, Martin Luther King happened, and then he went away or something, and then Malcolm X came, and then he went away, and then you got Sam Cooke, and then he showed up. Like, you don't really think about, hey, all these people are all doing their things all at the same time.
But at the same time mm-hmm. as you, because I agree 100%, mm-hmm. you have like these silos, like athletes over here, you have singers over there, you have these prominent people. You don't really think ever that the lines blur and things. But then if I think that, then I begin to feel bad about myself, because then I'm like, but wait, they're all black. Maybe they might know. I would feel bad, because then it's like, am I colorblind to history? Or like, and I don't say that like to sound negative towards myself, but it's like, it would almost seem like a question to ponder.
Because I had my own internal journey where at some point I realized, oh, wait, these guys all did the thing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were all during the same years. They were all around during the same years. So I don't know. For me being somebody, going back to what I was saying earlier, for me being somebody who researches a lot of what we see, and I do the homework, I go in depth. For the fact that I saw this movie and I had no idea where, like, in history this had occurred, mm-hmm. except for obviously the year and date that it gave it to me. But in terms of my mind, where that bit of history, where that, like, index card of 1964, January, Miami, Florida, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, it is kind of disappointing for the sake of, like, the school systems. But at the same time, it's also kind of like disappointing in myself that I didn't know about this or hear about this. And it goes back to like sharing stories and being able to communicate each other's history to other people. Like for me, I don't know as much about like Cesar Chavez or, you know, General Zapata, or like I can tell you everything about Texas, but that's because it was like hammered into us growing up. Like I had to know that stuff. But like knowing like prominent Latinx leaders in the fight for the cause of like equal rights for Latinos, across not just California, but all other places. So I just a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I wanted to ask you that, because it was a question that I had on my mind after we saw the film. So after we saw the film, what was your first impression?
I kind of like, I was kind of blown away. Like, honestly, like some of the subject matter of the film, was not what I was expecting when we were going into it, like, because I wasn't expecting really for these figures to be in any type of real conflict.
Yeah,
because I kind of like maybe naively just kind of assumed, you know, like they're all kind of working towards progress in their own way, and then like, you know, throughout the course of the film, some people are like, are you really though, or are you just kind of leaving everyone behind? And I was like, that's an interesting question.
I'm I'm not one to be speechless when a movie is over. Like usually I'll have some comment or I'll have some type of reaction or I'll have something. and for all of the non-action that was in this film, mm-hmm. the dialogue, the conversation still kept me on the edge of my seat and had me thinking all the way until the credits were rolling and had me thinking even after the credits rolled. And it's like, this movie, my first impression of this movie was like, I wish I had seen this sooner. Mm. You know, I wish I had this, not the awareness of the situation, but this conversation. Like, and we'll get into the conversations in a second, but like, the dynamic of this film is not to create, this film does what films like 12 Angry Men or movies that kind of confine the entirety, almost the entirety of the film within either one set or one localized area. Like Do the Right Thing is another one I can think of because it's all in that one block. In the Heights is another one that really kind of touches on that. The musical.
I thought that hasn't come out yet.
The musical. There's the musical that came out before. There we go. We're clicking. But the idea that a lot of these stories, or even oh my gosh, a lot of these stories. I literally went and like had a brain fart. But a lot of these stories kind of seem self-contained within, you know, where their localized area is. I mean, you don't feel like it's traveling too far. You feel like everything is within reaching distance of the characters that are in the film. And oh, I'm sorry, it's called A Bronx Tale. That's another one where like you have everything kind of enclosed in particular areas. And this movie, they didn't leave far from the hotel. Like there was maybe 5 minutes at the boxing arena, mm-hmm. and then they were back at each other's hotel rooms respectively, and then they spent maybe 2-3 minutes in each, you know, altogether for all the hotel rooms, and then it's in its entirety, the rest of the film, the rest of almost 2 hours are in that hotel room that is where Malcolm X is. And the fact that everything is so enclosed there, it really does change how you see the film, because I don't know if you saw it too, but for me, like it just seemed like the room kept getting smaller as these conversations kept getting bigger, mm-hmm. and you're watching these realizations and these revelations and these explanations and these, you know, these moments in all of the film where the growth is visible and the recognition is on their faces, and these people become bigger and bigger and bigger to me as the film continues. There's not many ways that I can usually explain a film that leaves me speechless, because obviously it leaves me speechless.
Yeah, fair.
But I think one of the best ways I can say it is, it, you know, it moved me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into the film as we dive in, because I know we've kind of spent a lot of time just talking about our expectations and so forth. But one of the things that I think is absolutely incredible about this particular movie is the awesome cast that they have for the movie. I've only seen Leslie Odom Jr. in Hamilton. Sorry. I've only seen him in Hamilton, but in this movie as Sam Cooke, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Not only is he a phenomenal singer, but the man acts incredibly in this movie. Oh, that's right. He was on Murder on the Orient Express. That's right. He didn't sing in it, but still. Oh, and he was in Red Tails. I didn't even know that. I gotta go back. his role in this movie, his, you know, personification, his portrayal of Sam Cooke was dead on. And the fact that Leslie Odom Jr. is a natural singer, he is a man whose voice could probably put me to sleep if I left it on for a while, which I have. I've put on some of his albums, and it's just like, it's ethereal. It's majestic. The man has a great set of pipes, and he is a phenomenal actor, and I think he was great. I also really liked the actor who played, which I had never seen him before, but the actor who played Malcolm X, Kingsley Benadire.
Mm-hmm.
The dude was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, his mannerisms, the way he spoke, the way he even stood, dead on. Dead on. Like Malcolm X. I'm trying to go through some of his stuff. He was in Peaky Blinders. What the? I gotta check a lot of these out. His performance, he was kind of the nucleus, if you will, to the whole entire event.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of based around his poking and prodding, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Which garnered a lot of the conversations that happened after the fact. But yeah, the guy was incredible.
Yeah, he was kind of like the standout performance for me, really. Mm. Like, the other guys are still really good.
Mm-hmm.
But like, this guy, like, he's just bringing some fire with like this, like his acting towards this role. I've only seen like very few things of like, you know, the actual Malcolm X and him speaking. But like, he nailed it. Like, yeah, it was pretty good.
And mind you, there are other standout performances as well, like Eli Gorey, who played Cassius Clay. He played Cassius when he was about 22, I believe, 22, yep, 23. And mind you, yeah, I mean, he looks like a young Muhammad Ali. He looks very much, he sounds very much like him. He looks like him. It was a good portrayal. Aldis Hodge, who I'm a huge fan of Aldis Hodge. I've been watching him since we were talking about it the other day. Leverage. I absolutely loved him in Underground. He's been on a lot of different things as well. Just like Ben. Just like Leslie Odom. He was in Red Tails as well with him. He was in Straight Outta Compton. He was in Hidden Figures. But Aldis Hodge always seems like he gets lost in the role. Like, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, he gets into the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen him either on TV or on film where I see Aldis Hodge. Like, I always look at him and I see the character he portrays. If you've ever seen Underground, get a chance to see that, because he is phenomenal in that. But, yeah, he's another standout performer. But... kind of a little bit of the unspoken hero, the two bodyguards for Malcolm X,
yeah.
Kareem X and Jamal, Lance Reddick played Kareem X. I've always seen him as a very versatile actor, Kareem. No, I'm sorry, Lance Reddick. Mm-hmm. I almost called him by his actual character name. He's always seemed like a very versatile actor, like somebody who can do both sides of the spectrum, because I've seen him do his performance in John Wick. I've seen him in other things where he plays a straight man, and then he does things like little video skits on Funny or Die, where he plays the toy store manager. He was on the Eric Andre Show. I mean, the man has flexibility.
I like that show. I remember him from that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was complete ridiculous. Comes out with a trumpet or something, or a saxophone. It was great. And then Christian Magby, I've never really seen him in anything, but I do got to give the man credit where credit is due. He was good. He did well. So of course, a lot of the other actresses and actors were phenomenal as well. Did you know that the woman who played Sam Cooke's wife in the movie was his actual real wife? Like, is Leslie Odom Jr.'s real wife?
I didn't know. That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that in the movie they were married.
To be honest, I didn't know either.
I saw that credit as with the same last name. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Because, like, the way they act, well, like, the way he acts to her, it seemed like maybe they were just, like, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend or something like that.
Yeah.
So. Interesting.
But going into the story, so the story writing of this film is what really stands out, because as we mentioned, this essentially takes place after Cassius Clay has the world championship fight with Sonny Liston Jr. And he wins, becoming the world champion, and they decide to all meet up over at Malcolm X's motel room because they're going to celebrate. Mm-hmm. I guess was the promised opportunity after that. But they all get there, and it kind of turns into this small gathering of the four of them, with ultimately Malcolm X urging or not persuading, but like at the unction, if you will, of Malcolm X for Cassius Clay to reveal to their friends that he is now Muslim. All the while, you have this whole debacle going on behind the scenes with Malcolm X, where he is actually considering leaving the nation and starting his own Islamic faith organization, I suppose. Mm-hmm. This is where part of my history of Malcolm X is not fully all there.
Yeah.
But from what I gathered from the film, yeah, that's kind of what he was mentioning. And the whole night is kind of, Malcolm is kind of planning that whole night so that way if he can get Cassius to join his new organization, then it'll get people to flock to, I guess, Malcolm X's form of faith. Because it doesn't really sound like he's leaving the Islamic faith. He's just changing organizations or creating a new organization.
Yeah, it basically seems like, you know.
Sounds like a denomination of Islam.
Yeah, basically. It sounds like that. Like, he's like, I don't like how this is going. I'm going to start my own type thing. But it seems like there might be deadly consequences to that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
how he puts it. No, it. So, reading about it after the fact, mm-hmm. everything that went on with that, with Malcolm X and Muhammad or whatever, the man who was over their organization, it got ugly, like really bad. Which I believe ultimately Malcolm X was assassinated later on in his life by members of the Islamic faith at the behest of their leader, Muhammad something or whatever, the guy in that area.
That's one of the few places that audiobook I was listening to touched on. That's as far as I got into it. Seems incredibly shady. What happened to him?
Without a doubt. Apparently there's like, there at the time there was a magazine that they did monthly. It was like Islam Monthly or something. There was a magazine, and the magazine would regularly depict cartoon, like satirical cartoons with like Malcolm X's head bouncing on the in the panels, or like that he needs to die or things like that. Like there's craziness that went on during that time.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, he did pass away later on by assassination. He got shot several times. But at this particular time, his concern was getting notoriety for the new organization that he wanted to do, which I don't know the reasons why. I don't know why he was leaving or things like that. But the night turns into this conversation about what each of them, specifically Sam Cooke from Malcolm, what Sam is doing to further the cause for the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns really serious, really fast. It kind of reminded me, hit a little bit on those same beats, like with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, how those first scenes you see, like it just goes from playful and then like it builds up really fast.
Yeah.
This was one of those instances where it starts out kind of, you know, jovial and they're all excited to hang out and whatnot. And then it kind of goes from there, and then it just leaps forward to like all these serious conversations, talking about the the furthering of the cause on the part of like Sam Cooke, who's a very successful singer and producer, on the part of Jim Brown, who is a Cleveland Browns football player, who is at the time considering making the switch over to acting, and Muhammad Ali, who had just won the world championship.
Like that very night.
Literally that very night. But a lot of these conversations that they have, it's like, yes, on the surface, there are a lot of really poignant questions of like, well, what are you doing for the cause? In the movie, there's a lot of very poignant questions. But then it turns into like this deeper conversation of like, what is really happening on the back end of this person's life? Like, are they really not doing anything? Or are they actually doing more than what's expected? And how every bit counts, whether if you're on the front lines or you're financing the whole cause moving forward or being a supporter of it. Like, there's a lot of great conversations in this movie that really just had my mind going like, oh my gosh, yeah, oh yeah.
And you know what the best part of it is that the movie itself doesn't be like, well, this person is clearly right and this person is clearly wrong. It actually like gives people a time to actually like wrestle with what the other is saying and actually like respond to it and deal with it, which I thought is really cool, because then you as a viewer also have to respond to it, which is nice.
Yeah,
like I like movies that make me think, man.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because like you said, to be honest, since you mentioned it, I don't recall anybody ever coming out like on top as like, well, all you guys, my hands are clean, y'all are the ones who messed up, blah blah blah. Like, there was nobody who walked out of that motel room by the end of the night or slash day, because it went on for a while, that ultimately was more than the other in any shape or form, because everybody had either something they were hiding, something they were scared of, something that they weren't ready to commit to, or something that they realized in either a part of themselves or a part of what they are doing for the Black community. But I do have to admit that before I kind of get ahead of myself, one of the most craziest scenes in the film happens within like the first 5-10 minutes of the film. And I don't mind talking about it. In terms of like what happens, because it floored me, because of how the scene was going. You think, okay, like Jim Brown shows up at this plantation looking property. He walks out and some young blonde haired white girl like, oh, Jim, how's it going? Oh yeah, it's good to see you. Oh, I bet. Let me go get, or he goes, I'm here to see Mr. So-and-so. And he goes, oh yeah. Let me go get him for you. Oh, it's so good to see you, Jim. Oh, Cleveland Brown, Jim, blah, blah, blah. And so the actor Bo Bridges comes out. He's like, Jim, blah, 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 here, have a seat. And they sit on the porch, sitting, you're like, can I get you something to drink? Sweetheart, bring out two fresh lemonades and blah, blah, blah. And you're thinking, okay, all right. Like, you know, and they're talking and they're talking about Jim's like achievements in football, how many yards he rushed or ran. I didn't get the number really. And what, you know, all that he had done. And this man, Bo Bridges, is telling him, you know, like, you know, so I don't mind telling people that I'm proud to be from Georgia, you know, where the great Jim Brown is from, blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah. And Jim Brown tells him, yeah, you know, I wish the rest of the town felt the same way as you, but I really appreciate hearing you say that. My mom would really appreciate hearing you say that as well, I believe he says. And they're talking and they bring out the lemonade and he's, you know, drinking and they're talking. And then, this conversation goes on for about 5 minutes and you're like, okay, cool. And then the girl comes back out and she's like, I hate to interrupt, but granddad, you said you were going to move that bureau, blah, blah, blah. Oh yeah. Okay. Let me go do this real quick. And he gets up, he starts walking, and Jim walks up and he's like, Mr. So-and-so, you know, I can help you move that. I didn't know if you were moving things, but I could help you. And Bo Bridges turns around and tells this man, oh, thanks, but you know African-Americans aren't allowed inside the house. And he doesn't use African-Americans. He says the N-word. and then he just turns around and walks. And I'm like, you literally just kissed this man's big toe right outside, and then you did that. I was. You know, I was.
Yeah, that was you. But like when I was watching this scene, like around the part where the lemonade thing happened, I was like, something's wrong, because like the way Aldous Hodge is playing this, he's like there's a tension with him, and I'm like, something is off, and I'm worried about where this is going.
I was in the same boat. I was like, at first I was like, well, maybe this is like a cruel trick, or maybe there's like some kind of prank or some type of, and Beau Bridges is just, he's really giving it to him. He's like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then she brings out the lemonade, and I thought, well, maybe she's only going to bring out lemonade to him and not to Jim. And then she brought out two.
I was like, okay.
And at first I thought, I was like, maybe she peed in it. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know what was going on. And sure enough, it looked like regular lemonade. He didn't sniff. You're like, oh, this smells like piss. Like, no, it everything looked on the up and up. And I'm like, it was at that moment. And I think this is what it was. It was at that moment. I think I let my guard down. And then the movie kicked me in the butt. Like, completely. Because it's like, are you for real? Like, seriously. You literally just told this man that you were proud to be in the same town that he was from, but he's not allowed in your house?
Nope.
That scene fired me up. I was like,
yeah, I did.
Oh, hell no.
We had to pause the movie for a second.
We did. I'm so glad that this was on Amazon Prime, because if this was in the theaters.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
This would have been rough.
Now that I think about it, I would have loved to have been in the theaters with a bunch of other folks.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, just the whole uproar. What the? Like, totally, like, going off. Yeah, that would have been... That would have been interesting. But no, that scene just, like, oh my gosh. Like, it's like when you fall on your back and you get the wind knocked out of you. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, Hold up. And he said it so cavalier. Like, it didn't even miss a beat.
Nope.
Like, this man gave you lemonade. He's a racist. Like, how? Like, what are they going to do? Burn the cup afterward? Like, I didn't get it. It was really, it didn't make sense, but it made sense, you know? Like,
I would argue racism doesn't make sense.
No, 100% racism does not make sense. I'm just saying, like, okay, you know what? Because Jim Brown actually says it very eloquently later on in the film, how he says, you know, I actually hate those people who pretend to be nice and secretly are racist or whatever in their hearts.
Yeah.
I hate those people more than the ones who are just outright racist and tell it to your face.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, cause Bo gonna get it. man, that scene fired me up. Cause I was like, oh man. And then everything else was throughout the film was on par with that level of like emotional intensity. Like the conversations with Malcolm and Sam were intense, and they got to the point where they're almost physical, and those were impactful. But then at the same time, the conversation with Jim Brown and Malcolm X was very quiet and very, very almost like whisper like, but that still had like, oh my gosh, the implications about the whole kind of difference between light-skinned African-Americans and dark-skinned African-Americans, and how there's a difference even in that, and there's a sense of privilege, and it's like, oh my God, it's right, you know, because you know, I know I have friends who, obviously, you, because you're black,
yeah.
But you know, who have faced things like this as well, and I have a really good friend, and I've mentioned her on this podcast, and she's a great activist. She's so wonderful, fighting for a lot of things that are going on, that are injustices in the world, and in proper representations in film and all, you know, visual medium. Val Guerin, who's out in New York, and she's actually mentioned it to me before, as well as that conversation and how she has Instagram lives where she talks about it with other people. And I'm like, it is a thing. It's a thing. You know, people have this distinction even amongst the African-American community itself. And Jim Brown just brought it up to Malcolm X like that. And it's like, I never thought that would be a conversation that anybody would bring to Malcolm X, but okay. Like, I'm just like, but even that conversation is meaningful, and it's impactful. And then even the conversations between Sam and Cassius, like in the car, and recognizing like the need for change and who do we need to make the change for? And it's for people like that, that you just gave money to. And it's people like those kids who look up to you and see you like this. And it's like, yeah, that's this movie makes several really great points in the effort of recognizing all hands make the burden light.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main premise of this film. It's not like everybody has to put their hands into the same pot.
Mm-hmm.
It's that everybody's carrying water in their own pot, and it's transferring the water to wherever it needs to go. They're all making the efforts to do the work in their own way. And it was really great seeing that realization clear across the board from everybody, from Cassius Clay all the way through Sam Cooke and Leslie Odom Jr. doing this great performance at the end of the film of one of his songs. Do you remember what the song was called?
Yes, I looked it up. It's called A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yes, and it's
that was a great.
It was a great song. Leslie Odom Jr. actually does the singing on that one, and it's phenomenal. It moves you. But to have that play, having him sing that after the events of everything that happened in that motel room, and you see, like, you see Jim Brown talking to people saying he's going to make the transition, he's retiring from football and he's going to be acting full time. You got a prominent black actor in the 1960s Hollywood. That's something. And then you have the situation with Muhammad Ali, who's getting presented, I guess, if you will, to the Islamic community as Muhammad Ali. And then you see the circumstances happening around Malcolm X, where his house gets firebombed, which that actually happened. And you see how, like the times they're changing, how things are progressing. And ultimately, those are all like the starting points of what is to come for these particular individuals. And you take all that into consideration and you're like, you know, this conversation was the launching pad, if you will, for these mindsets to come to be more prevalent within these individuals. And mind you, let me just preface this. I know this is a movie. That's, yeah. You know, I understand. However, if there was any truth to whatever happened, that's great. The fact is that there is still truth in the words that were spoken.
Yeah, like, even if it turns out, like, the only thing that's true about this movie is that these four people were in a hotel room.
And they had ice cream.
That was it. Like, this... That's a crazy story, but like this movie is still like really good and stands on its own merits.
Yeah. This is one of those movies where, yes, it is almost about 2 hours long. It's like an hour and 58 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's got a lot of just. So when I used to play baseball, when we would, you know, practice and whatever, we would pitches that would go right down the center of the lane, right down the center of the box. We would call those, you know, big fat juicy pitches. And I'm saying pitches just so people make sure. Okay, it's like we'd call them like meaty pitches because they would come down and just you get a chunk out of it and you send it everywhere. And I felt like every single nugget in this movie was a huge, juicy pitch to just really take off and go with it somewhere. Like everything there, they were, all of them were great points to have conversation. And if anything, this film can serve as a great opportunity to find the talking points. If you don't know what to say when you are in conversations with people who are obtuse to the realities of the world that we live in and the injustices that happen, I would say, hey, do you have Amazon Prime? Just, and be like, let's go watch a movie together. Like this movie just has all those opportunities within it to just say, these are all real things. And here's the crazy part. Here is the incredible crazy part. These are all still relevant today.
Yep.
Like none of this is news to anybody. Like this movie, these conversations, the implications, the actions of people, the shadiness of some folk, even in the music industry, everything, those are all still conversations that are happening today, and everybody's ability to give to the cause, to add to the conversation, to bring together awareness. Those are literally still conversations that are happening even today. We are literally still hearing about people who are getting arrested for things that were heinous at Washington, D.C., or people who are ridiculous or police officers. Those police, I'm not saying all police officers, but I'm saying those police officers who make everybody look bad, those ones getting tried and being, you know, told or being prosecuted for being discriminate, you know, against other people, people of color, people of different races, things like that. It's like it's still happening out there. So it kind of leaves you at a poignant place in terms of the conversation of, did I see a movie that was made for understanding of the past, or did I see a movie that's going to help me understand the future? Like, I think that's the biggest question that Regina King leaves you with. You know, where does this fit in the cycle of my understanding?
Well, I think the answer to that question is it's for both, really. Like, because, like, especially, well, this movie kind of, like, touched upon, like, some of my own internal thought processes that I was having back during June of last year with, like, a whole lot going on. Like, because, like, back then I was, like, worrying, am I even doing enough? Like, shouldn't I be out there protesting? I didn't go because, you know, coronavirus, and I was kind of worried about that because I've
been it's true about it. I remember,
but yeah, like this movie, like, kind of just reiterated something I eventually came to the conclusion of, is that everyone can help in their own way.
Yeah,
there's not just one way to do something, which is just a message that I really love.
Yeah, and yeah, and mind you, yeah, the idea that it serves both purposes is obviously a sound logic, but in that same mindset as well, building on that knowledge and making it accessible, because let's be frank, this movie is really incredible, but this movie is incredible because we know the truth that it tells and we recognize the implications that this film could have. There's a lot of younger crowds out there who aren't aware of, like, a lot of the things that are happening in the world today, and some of them are a little obtuse to recognizing those things. I mean, there's a ton of young people who just don't get the fact that this struggle has been constant for almost, what, 400 years?
Yeah.
You know, in terms of racial inequality and discrimination, and the fact that this movie is out there and people can find it, it speaks to the opportunities that are being made. But at the same time, we as people, we as this podcast, have a responsibility, a duty, if you will, to speak on it, to let people know, hey, you got to see this. Like, not just for entertainment value, for educational value. Like, this is speaking out. And I think we really need to listen. And obviously with the world kind of in pivot, well, specifically the United States being in this pivotal moment mm-hmm. where we are on the eve of January 20th, 2021, where our new president is going to be inaugurated tomorrow, I believe. Isn't it tomorrow? It's tomorrow. And the fact that that's happening and it's going to change everything, having this knowledge seems like a really great idea. It's just the fact of getting it out there to people to see it and hear it, you know. Before we wrap up, was there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, I think we covered all the good parts of this movie.
Any scene that you want to talk about in particular?
No, because like that one.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's just out of nowhere.
Yeah, completely. Oh, man. So wrapping this thing up, obviously we're going to go around the table. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles spins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie passes for me. Like, it hits pretty much everything it wants to touch just out of the park, and you're just left blown away. So for me, this is like a 5 out of 5 monocles. Please see this movie, because these are the types of movies that we really need to see.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. This movie is by far one of the best films of, because it was essentially released last year, so it is a 2020 film. It was released in small batches for like press and so forth, but it came out publicly in 2021. However, I do have to say this was probably one of the more influential films I have seen out of all of last year. And you know, that's saying a lot because of the fact that I saw a lot of independent films last year because there was nothing that was coming out. So this film works. This film passes. This film excels. And I have to give it a 5 out of 5. This movie is a must-see for anybody who is wondering whether or not if they are doing their part or if they are even a part of the progress and not a part of the digression. Watch this with an open understanding and a recognition that we all have a role to play, whether or not if you are African-American or if you're white, Latino, or Latinx, if you're Asian, if you're European, whatever you may think you are, you have a role to play. And it's clear across the world because there are people who are fighting for the same thing that we are in Europe. You know, what's the name of the actor? John Boyega. Oh. John Boyega has staked his name, his career on bringing awareness to racial inequality. All summer long, I followed him on Instagram, and this man has stated, you know, I'll probably never work in Hollywood again, but as long as I am out here fighting for this cause, I won't stop. And it's like, that man made millions of dollars in Star Wars. Like, literally, millions. He's willing to throw all of that away for what he believes in. And that speaks, you know?
Yeah, a lot of respect for
that. Yeah, 100%. So, you have to see this movie. Check it out. It is on Amazon Prime. It is a very, very wonderful film and entertaining. Check it out. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch us on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 250 episodes now. So check us out. We also have a bunch of other episodes on several other different things. So check out our lovely repertoire. Also, check us out on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We'd love to see you there. We are excited about how this year is going. We're excited about all the new changes that are happening, not only with the show, but also with just life in general and what we have in store for the future. So we are excited, and we will talk to you next week. So from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.